Welcome to the Nature Backed podcast, where we are talking about climate change and the new green economy. A lot of this debate started half a century ago with Club of Rome's report Limits of Growth. This discussion with Anders Wijkman, who's honorary president of Club of Rome, was recorded late October on sidelines of Greenest Summit in Tallinn.
Hey there, I hope you're enjoying the Nature Backed podcast. I'm Merit, I'm the CEO and co-founder of Single Earth, and we're a team of more than 70 people building a nature-backed economy. And if that sounds crazy enough for you, then join us. Sign up at single.earth to be among the first to get access to our nature-backed tokens. And let's talk more on our Earth Savers Discord channel. Enjoy the show.
Welcome, Anders.
Thank you.
Basically, 1972 report Limits of Growth was a wake-up call, but no one answered. What went wrong?
I think it was launched during a period of time when economies all over the world had been growing fast because there was a lot of build-up and reconstruction after the Second World War. And people in general, including policymakers, they were just aiming for a better standard of living, and better standard of living was interpreted as buying more stuff all the time. So I don't think the message was not very welcome. And at that time, the pressure on the planet was not as big as today.
Exactly.
But you know, today we are using three times as many materials. And we are using maybe two times or even three times as much energy per year. So the situation is much more acute now. But the Limits report was an attempt to show that by working out, by developing different scenarios, it would be possible to adjust your policy so that you avoided scenarios that were not pleasant. That was the purpose. And the book was not a doomsday report saying that everything is going to hell. No, it was not. It was containing five or six scenarios. And one of them, the business as usual, was really bad, was black. But there were others that were quite optimistic. If you use technology-wise, if you impose policy measures, if you control population, if you control pollution, you will do fine.
But you know, looking back, we probably have followed the black scenario.
Yeah, I think we follow sort of business or policy as usual to a large extent. Of course, I mean there are efforts. In particular in Europe, I mean, the Green Deal is a good example of that. But if you look at the world at large, we are, of course, moving in the wrong direction. Almost every possible environment indicator is pointing downwards, not upwards. So I'm not happy. I'm quite pessimistic, I must say. Although I see possibilities, opportunities to do the right things, but it's there is a lot of resistance.
Now, when looking forward, there's also, you know, a lot of European governments and around the world governments are talking about the 2030 reaching some kind of the net zero targets, and you know, basically everybody's saying that's not going to happen, and the biggest impact could be on some carbon prices ahead of this to offset the impact on the climate. Is humankind somehow incapable of learning, or?
I think if you look at, if you look at history, major transformations were always happening in the context of crisis, wars, pandemics. So we are not good at changing course. There is a Danish writer, and he has expressed a lot of small quotes, and one of them is that to will something is a habit, and if it's not a habit, you don't want it. So I think we are resistant to change as long as we think life is relatively good. And also the kind of capitalist economy we have is striving all the time to expand markets, sell more, and it's very difficult to interfere with that, because if you interfere with that, revenues are down, taxes are down, people are unemployed. When taxes are down, the governments find it more difficult to support people. So it's a downward spiral kind of. So we really need to be intelligent and to step by step organize the economy differently. And of course, also in this very competitive world, where you cannot do this alone, you have to do it together with a number of countries. I tend to think that Europe is big enough for that to happen, but we also have tensions in Europe.
We have also war in Europe. Yeah. We have a lot of geopolitical tensions between the different continents. I'm not as experienced as you, but also looking at the world, it somehow feels a little bit bleak.
Yeah. Right now we are in a, I would say, almost perfect storm. We have Putin's aggression and all the consequences of that on food, energy, etc. And then we have an accelerating climate problem. Of course, we don't know how big the risk is, but it's pretty big. Mm. And then we have the erosion of ecosystems and biodiversity. And then what I think is perhaps the most difficult question or burning question is rising inequalities. Because in order to deal with the long-term issues, you need trust in society, and the trust level is not very good. It differs from country to country, but look at the UK, look at the US, look at Sweden. We now have a 21% populist, xenophobic, nationalistic party. Which is influencing the government. If somebody would have said that 5 years ago, Sweden, nobody would have believed you. Mm. But that's happening.
Mm. Exactly. But moving towards the kind of...
And I think it's very much caused by the arrogance among the elites over the last 20 to 30 years. Mm. This global economy where 5 to 10% of the population, they thrive, they like it, they travel a lot, they do business deals, etc. But more or less the rest of the population are either not really part of it, or they are suffering from it because labor or employment is moving from one place to the other, etc. So it's been a very unfortunate development, and I think we have to start by addressing inequalities.
Mm. Kind of moving towards the idea that there could be a solution. What could be the kind of logical first steps? How to basically move towards solution?
Well, first of all, I think there has to be a better dialogue between the North and the South, between industrialized countries and low-income countries. China is a special case. They used to be a low-income country. They are no longer. They are mixed. All the low-income countries where we have some 3 to 4 billion people who live on less than $3-4 a day, it's a miserable life. So we need to do something about that. And then we need to address inequality in our own countries. And that you can do by taxation. You can do it by what I proposed yesterday was a universal basic dividend, taxing the commons, both the natural commons and the other commons, like the internet, etc. Enormous amounts of money is being done in terms of profits. And these companies should pay a fee, and that fee should then be distributed, particularly among poor people. I think we need some kind of those solutions. And then, of course, the energy system. I think why it's so difficult with fossil fuels is because each liter or barrel of oil represents, I don't know how many energy slaves. I mean, 100 years ago, before the fossil fuel era, we had muscle power and we have animals who helped us. Mm. Now, most of that is done by oil and gas and coal. That high quality energy is very difficult to replace. So we are so dependent on it. And before we can phase it out, of course, we must put in place another system. And we haven't done that. We would need to quadruple or double five times the investments in renewables, in storage, in green hydrogen. Some people say nuclear. I wouldn't favor that, but it will probably happen. But we need a different energy system, and that has to be built from bottom up. And it can be done. We didn't have the technologies 10, 15 years ago, but we do today. And then the food system is so important. The food system is very risky, because on the one hand, with all the inputs, fertilizers and pesticides, etc., we have achieved much higher yields, but we are also burning out the soils, and the soils are eroded. So we need a different type of agriculture. And there is a model, regenerative agriculture, where you disturb the soil as little as possible. You develop perennial crops. You build roots in the soil. You store carbon. It becomes more fertile. I think it's very interesting. It's very exciting. So these kind of changes, I think, would bring us on a better footing. And then, of course, materials have to be managed differently. These linear flows means that we threw away a lot of money, because there is a lot of value in products that we discard and the materials embedded. But then it leads to a lot of unnecessary pollution, because if we could instead renovate and refurbish with these materials, it would create very little disturbance. Now we have to dig new metals and minerals in the earth crust, yeah. etc.
Yeah, it's regenerative farming is something which is interesting and emerging, but in looking, not being a specialist, looking at it from outside, it feels like it's very kind of local and small still. That when we have on the one hand side, like the, you know, the slide you were showing earlier today of the all the cows, cows of this world, and the pigs and the sheep, how big weight of the total they have on the nature, the regenerative farming is probably, you know, in the near term.
Well, but it's growing. And it's growing in the Midwest in the U.S., which is good.
Wow.
Yeah. You can Google a guy called Gabe Brown. You can Google a guy called Montgomery, David Montgomery. Google those guys and you'll have a lot of good examples. It's growing in France. It's growing in Switzerland. It's growing in Ireland, in Scotland. Some big farms in southern Sweden, in Skåne, apply this, and they are very happy because they use less inputs, they don't plow, so they use less manpower, so they have lower costs, and they have at least the same yields, probably more. So I think we have to change the incentives in the agricultural policies, the European CAP, Common Agriculture Policy. It provides carrots for farmers, and these carrots should look different. And I think it's going to happen, but of course, some of the big farmers who do very well with the present system, they fight it, they oppose, of course.
It's human nature.
Yeah.
Really can't do much about it. you know, going forward, our focus or my focus has been mostly on the climate over the last few years, at least, if not longer. What can we do about the climate? I mean, should the political sector start to move and put, I don't know, bigger limitations on emissions, or should we, you know, create is the kind of carbon offsetting business. This sounds like mostly like indulgences trend.
Well, some carbon offsetting is okay, some is not, but it's not a substitute, I think. Well, some people say that we should declare sort of a war economy, like we did in a way during the pandemic in some countries. I think we have to, if people in general agree there is an emergency, we should also apply emergency measures, and then we would have to, then we could speed up mitigation. But again, it's difficult in one country. We need, Europe can do it. I think the Green Deal is somewhat of an effort. It should be stronger. How to do it in the US, where you have a Republican Party that is against almost anything, I don't know. What to do about Russia, I don't know.
I think nobody knows outside Russia.
And I've just read a book by Ukrainian author, woman, Oksana Sabush, something, The Longest Day. And she describes how this mentality among the Russian elite towards Ukrainians to dominate and to look down at Ukrainians has been there for centuries. And it's not only Putin, that's the problem. So I don't know. I mean, it looks very difficult. Somebody has to provide Putin an escape, because if he would turn up as a loser, that wouldn't work. So I simply don't know. China is a different thing. They are so long term. I think they realize that climate change is a very big challenge for them, and they already experience all these extreme weather events on this continent. So I think they are likely to do more and more. But if they do it together with us or not, that's a good question. The tension that's building up between the US and China is, I think, very unfortunate. But maybe I'm naive. Some people say that the Chinese are spying everywhere and taking our technologies, stealing our technology. I don't know enough about that. But I would submit that in this situation, where we have so many challenges that affect all of us, we need more cooperation than less. We really do.
So more cooperation.
Yeah.
I mean, the UN?
I think the Secretary General Guterres is a very good man. I think he is very candid. He is very outspoken. But of course, the limits are there. And when you have Russia at the Security Council,
I mean, on security level, they can't do much. But maybe they can do something on the climate level.
Yes, and they can do a lot when it comes to humanitarian assistance and development cooperation.
South-North balance, yeah. Maybe the topics like that.
And they have convening power, so it's a good place for dialogue. But I think we need to change the format of the dialogues. These big conferences mean very little. I was member of something some years ago called the Tällberg Foundation in Sweden. We organized big meetings, 500, 600, 700 people in a little village in Dalarna, in the middle of Sweden, in a big tent, once a year. And the title of the meetings was, "How on earth can we live together, we people, with nature?" And that was really and we had conversations at coffee tables among all these people for 3-4 days. And we need these kind of conversations where we have had enough of, you know, speeches, one speech after the other, and governments making their points and then they travel back. you don't solve anything by that. You need much better conversations, dialogues. Mm-hmm. So that could be a way to reform the UN. Yeah.
Send them to Central Sweden to discuss in a tent.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it was good.
Yeah, I bet it sounds like a reason, kind of.
But we ran out of money, so we had to stop it, unfortunately.
Okay, but run out of money. That sounds like the story of the humankind.
Yeah, we run out of money for the good things.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, that's.
Looking forward, what's your next big, challenge, or what will you be working in the coming months and quarters?
Well, I'm doing a lot of conferences on circularity and materials because I'm a member in International Resource Panel, and we are intensifying our work. And I think that's very meaningful because most people don't really understand materials. They understand that energy is something we have to change, but materials, no. So that's a pedagogic thing. Mm. Then I think this book that we launched, Earth for All, with the five transformations, is very, very important. Then I have in the back of my head to write a book about short-termism versus long-termism, yeah. Because short-termism is really the main problem in the economy.
Yeah.
Everybody is looking at the next
quarter
instead of looking at the next 50 years or something. I got to know a chief from an Indian tribe in the U.S., Oren Lyons, many years ago. And I remember when he gave the speech, he said, in my tribe, we always take responsibility for the next seven generations. And that's more or less a couple of hundred years.
Mm, exactly.
That's kind of the right approach. We should do that. That was not so necessary, at least not globally, some 50, 100 years ago, but now it is. Mm. Because now we are all very much in the same soup.
Exactly, same trouble.
Yeah.
In that soup.
And so that book, I hope I will be able to write that book, because I think it's needed. And in Sweden it's going to be, the title will be The Damned Short-Sightedness. Mm. Do you speak Swedish?
Very little.
Den förbannade kortsiktigheten.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But that makes a lot of sense. The short-termism challenge is definitely there, and it's. I love the seven generation parallel.
Yeah.
Thank you for the talk.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Join us again for the next episode. Thank you for listening. If you like the show, please give us a good rating and leave the feedback in your podcast player so others will find it too. We will be back next week. Turn on to Nature Backed Podcast.
Hey there, fabulous souls. I'm Stephanie Baklaan.
And I'm Eden Alpert.
And we're the hosts of the brand new podcast, Unapologetically Fab.
Get ready to join us on an amazing and real journey as we dive into life after 40 and own it.
We're all about changing the narrative, leaning into who you are, and living a life by your own design.
Join us as we embrace life unapologetically and redefine success.
This is Unapologetically Fab,
an Electric Cast production.
See you there.
Electric Cast.
Welcome to Sara Talk Solutions. Ladies and gentlemen, you've tuned into a bit of a different type of show. I'm Sara B, and I'm your host. You can find me on my IG, which is Aussie_Sara_LA. I talk about amazing, relevant conversations and topics and what functions that goes on in this magical, wonderful, wonderful city of the City of Angels. My IG, which is Aussie_Sara_LA.
Electric Cast.